Johnston Press, previously the most successful and biggest regional newspaper group, took on a lot of acquisitions 5-7 years ago. They're now, I think, known as toxic assets. They're not worth what they paid for, and the bank, they owe the bank RBS 300 million plus. And for the last 3-4 years, the bank has been putting them under really stringent conditions on the loan, charging upwards of 13%, which effectively means every year the profit, and they are profitable, which is around 60 million, that profit is paid to the bank on interest charges. So when they talk about RBS strangling small businesses, they should also look at what they're doing to big businesses, because it's the same strategy basically. Now, we tried, they got a new COE 2 years ago, Ashley Highfield. Doesn't come from a media background, or not one that you and I would recognize. And straight away he started to promote the idea that journalism and photography in particular now were things that he could basically get from user-generated content, that there was no real need to have professionals doing the work, and it was not only cheaper, he claims that it would make a more interactive product. None of these things have turned out to be true, not yet anyway. The 5 test beds that they had have not migrated revenue from the paper, from the text paper, to the weekly titles and the web. They're still well under revenue. So the latest twist was that they announced a redundancy voluntary program. And in order to get more people, they enhanced the terms to 3 weeks a year, plus notice. And we also had a previous agreement with them for £1,000 training, retraining if you took the redundancy. We've had so-called consultations nationally and locally. They've not been transparent. They've not told us what we've asked to know. They've certainly not told us how many people and in what groups they were looking to make redundant. And we picked up quite early on that photographers were being targeted, even though they denied it at the time. And I wrote to the company challenging them on this point. And what was happening was that in certain centres, the editors were going to the photographers and saying, look, if you've not applied for this voluntary redundancy, I'd encourage you to do so, because next year you're going to be on the hit list. And if you don't apply now, you may not get the same terms if you're made compulsory redundant next year. We raised that with them. Obviously, they denied it or said they had not heard that, which was rubbish. They reached the end of the consultation period. We still don't know throughout the group how many people have actually volunteered, but it's in the hundreds, and most of those will be going. But what became clear was that they not got enough photographers, and in some cases they wanted all of the photographers to volunteer to go. So a week ago they then moved the goalposts and said, well, we're now going to put serve notice on 24 photographers based in Scotland, Yorkshire and East Anglia. And these people are at risk of compulsory redundancy. The reason we think they never targeted other centres, Lancashire, South Coast, was because they probably did get the volunteers. So the areas where they never got the volunteers from amongst the photographers, they became targeted at risk of compulsory redundancy. We've had a meeting again about it last week. Obviously, I'm abbreviating this, but we are confronting them about all of this and challenging them on the way they conducted the so-called consultation. But equally, we've had to raise with them issues around what might happen if photographers go and take freelance contracts the latest information that I have is that there's a lot of resistance at the moment in Scotland, but elsewhere it's very patchy, I have to be honest with you about that. And most of the photographers in England either have volunteered or are looking at doing so and are not yet prepared to confront, if we do that, the company in any form of industrial action. So we've tried to ride two horses at once, really. We've obviously on the one hand tried to stop compulsory redundancies, and we have got the group chapel to agree that photographers, if they are targeted and made compulsory redundant, they will be supported, and we will, where we can, put ballots for industrial action. On the other hand, we've also, the other horse we've had to ride is to try and get what we could as the best outcome if people did decide to take the deal and then try and restart as freelance. Last week, and I've been dealing with Andrew about this, last week they did agree that they would provide us with the draft freelance contract that they want to use. But I've not received that yet. I've had to email them again today and yesterday asking for it. Apparently it's with their lawyers, so I've no idea what it will contain, but I do hope to get that this week for us to then look at and show to the members and take some advice on ourselves. On the retraining, the £1,000 they have said can be used for some courses that we're looking at trying to put on, basically to give video training and also to introduce people who are not experienced or knowledgeable about freelance work, how it operates. We were initially looking at a venue for this course to be in Manchester, but if the numbers are sufficient, then we could have it in two places. And one of the other options we've got is that the company will provide facilities in their Peterborough office, which is quite near to the railway station. They have said that they would pay the fares for anyone going, although I haven't got this in writing. And the problem I have with a lot of employers nowadays is they don't like putting things in writing. So you've got to be prepared that they may slip around a bit on that, but it's a minuted thing. We've met them, I've written and confirmed it. They haven't replied yet. But what I've said in the suggestion I've made is that, because they were saying, well, you can take it out of your £1,000 retraining. And that would be unfair to people who live further away from, say, Peterborough or Manchester. They would mean their fares would be greater. So I've said to them, why can't they just pay the fares so that everyone's treated fairly? And if you live near, you get the same effect as if you live far away. They're looking at doing that, but they haven't yet confirmed whether they will or not. I'm waiting again for an answer on that this week. Now, the impact of all this is, I think, extremely worrying, because even if you get a freelance contract, you're going to be competing against Joe Public with a mobile phone and all the stuff that you know better than I do about what's happening to your profession. And desperately we're trying with our campaigns department to get some focus on what this means for the quality of the regional press, because, you know, only a couple of weeks ago, you probably know this anyway, a horrible story about the dog that killed the child. Well, for 2 days, the Mirror and I think one of the other nationals carried a photograph of the wrong dog on the front page, and that was a picture that we think was harvested off Facebook. You know, if it wasn't so tragic, it would be farcical, but there you have this huge dog, big, I don't know if you saw it, but
it was a French Mastiff.
It wasn't though, you see. The dog that actually killed it was a smaller black and white.
Yeah, I'm saying the dog was a French Mastiff.
That's right.
A friend of mine owns one and he's furious.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that got through. Well, there are no checks on that. They just went straight into the paper on the front page. And that sort of thing's going to happen again and again if we don't have this quality watch on professional photography. It's not just the picture, it's the captions and all the things that you know make it the real thing. Sadly, the ownership these days doesn't seem to care whether it's text or pictures. It's all about being first and cheap. So we as a union have a real challenge, and I think you have a real challenge particularly because the technology is such that you can get source information, pictures from virtually anybody, and if you're prepared to play around with it, improve it even a bit, and a lot of people are prepared to do it for nothing. So we have to win that argument about how, why quality matters and also why professional photographers matter. I don't know if I'm being a little bit naive, but I gather in Johnston Press, one of the areas that they're not yet pushing hard on getting rid of staff photographers is on the south coast, Portsmouth. I guess that might make sense because of, you know, the fact that that local paper is clearly connected and covers an awful lot of naval stuff. There's a lot of big events that take place down there, and cheap pictures don't do the trick on that sort of thing. So it may be that's the reason, I don't know. But at the moment, that looks like one possible explanation. But elsewhere in the country, anything goes, really, it would seem. And they're prepared to use anything, and even, as you say, the wrong picture, just to be first and to appear as though they've got it before anyone else. So I've had a lot of discussions with Anne-Marie, who, as I think that video of hers is excellent, and
we're going to show it.
But I mean, it's a really good, strong, evidentially based portrayal of why photography is important and how it's not just about taking a picture. It's all about, you know, getting to know the subject and having a relationship with the community and doing the things that only good photographers can do. And, you know, it's really disturbing again that if you take out the real photographers, you're going to leave a lot of communities with people who are supplying pictures for all sorts of reasons. They won't always be genuine, and they'll also be themselves not familiar at all with that community. So things will get missed or not properly pictured in the first place. So as I say, it's a big challenge, and it's one which, if I can do anything, you know, whilst I'm here to help, I will. But the union has to work with you to take this on. And it's easy to understand why people who are facing the threat that a lot of your colleagues are, in the end, in today's world, they don't want to risk losing maybe a redundancy payment or getting one that's a lot inferior if they delay or hold firm. And so they're being forced to take the deal. Now, it's happened once before in Bristol with Northcliffe. Staff photographers there were offered absolutely appalling contracts, but nearly all of them took the redundancy pay because it was a relatively good package. But clearly it's not just only about copyright, ownership, end use, it's also about fees for the day. If you're staff, you get mileage payments, you get other allowances. If you're freelance, you've got to get the money that covers everything, as well as taking the picture. So all of those things need to be included in the challenge that we face, because if we don't get it right, I'm not saying it's going to be easy, because I can well imagine they're going to say, well, that's the contract. If you don't sign it, you don't get the work. So we're going to have to look at how we deal with that if that's what happens. I hope that's...
Yeah. I've got a couple of questions.
Yeah, by all means.
I'd like to.
Just two things. First of all, are all the people affected members of the union?
No.
what proportion of them are?
Well, it depends in which centre. Probably at best it's about 50 to 60%.
Really? Are they members of other unions or not?
Just not members, not that I know of, really? No.
Okay. And the other thing is, I mean, is there anything we can... I mean, I'm not sure. Is there anything we can do about this? I mean, what can we do to...
Well, I think as a council, you need to, I think, start getting your union to put your point of view about this. You're not going to individually, or this group is not going to be able to stop somebody in Sheffield or Halifax being made redundant. That's, you know, that's our job if we can do it. But you need to get the union to focus on why what I'm saying is important, that the quality is what matters, that professional photography is not something that can be done on the cheap, and that employers shouldn't be allowed to get away with this contract, basically, which is that, you know, modern phones, modern technology means you can get just as good a result from Joe Public. I mean, there's so many issues which you might like to think about. I'm not photographer based, but I have in my time represented and worked with photographers. There's things like photographing young people, children, things that, you know, you have to be qualified to do. I've had cases where people have been wrongly captioned. The guilty man or person has been identified as the policeman and things like that. And it happens, you know, and I've dealt with it. All because there wasn't a good check on the picture and the photographer. And even I know of cases, Archant, where they've been sued over it. So these are things I think you need to start rattling the cage about and reminding them that whilst you're not infallible, having a good photographer that is experienced and qualified makes a lot of difference. Let me give you an example of what I've done in another field. Because of the digital transition, as it's known, I've been dealing with companies that are really accelerating now the transition from text, print products, to digital. And I put together, with some help from FOCs and that on some of the nationals, what we call the digital charter. And we've started to use that. It's not a totally finished document, but it covers a lot of the main points about how you should respond to digital transition, because people are now being moved into 24/7 multi-platform working, and with staff cuts as well, they're doing everything now as well as handling the transition. So this charter is meant to be a guideline, a negotiating tool for chapels and officials to try and manage the change. I'm criticising the NUJ because people said I should have put it to policy committee first. You know? Well, I'm sorry. I don't have a problem with going to the policy committee, but that seat sits about once every 2 or 3 months. And frankly, things are happening every 2 or 3 days. And if we're going to have that kind of reaction to change, we're not going to make it. That's my own view. I might be saying that at the age I am and in the position I'm in, but it's just something I feel very strongly about. And we spend too much time on committees, I think. What we should have, in this case, what you're saying, maybe a photographer's charter. Because a number of things that you've said tonight make sense, but the problem is the user-generated content people are quite willing to do these things for nothing, a lot of them. And I've never yet worked out how, as a union, we can effectively demand payment for people who don't expect it in the first place, aren't members, and a lot of them won't, they'd rather have it in the paper than get paid for it. That's a lot of what I find. So we have to, you're right, there needs to be a debate about what we do about that, because there's some people that are even arguing on the digital side that, well, you know, we should let them join the union. Well, that's interesting. What do we offer them? What subscription do they pay? They're not getting a living out of it, so there's no way I can see of us as a union servicing people who don't expect to be paid. I mean, that's not what we're here to do. And so we have to, I think, cut out some of the nonsense that's being talked about in terms of that aspect of potential membership, because I think we have to establish that you belong to the union because you are the real thing. You're a real photographer. You've got the skills, the experience, the qualifications to do the job, and that means that's why you deserve to be paid. The way we engage with the people who don't expect to be paid, I think, is a different problem, and I think we have to use the charter, if that's what you come up with, to gradually try and erode the sort of willingness of employers to go to these sources or accept them. Now, I'll tell you something else in Johnston Press's case. At the moment, as far as I can tell, they are not making redundant anybody in the picture desk departments. It speaks for itself, doesn't it?
So they're becoming researchers as well?
I imagine so, and they'll do all the other things to make this rubbish look better, you know? So you have to address that issue as well, I think, too. And the other issue that we haven't talked about at all tonight, of course, is that reporters are now being told or expected to take pictures. And a lot of them don't see anything wrong in that. Maybe there isn't, but it's clearly not good for you.
The pictures are terrible for a start.
I'm sure they are. I mean, I first raised this 11 years ago with the national executive and tried to get some support for a position on that so that I could go around to, because I even had one case, I think it was in Boston, in Lincolnshire, where not only was the photographer or then the reporter being told to take the office camera with them, but, oh, and by the way, on your way back, can you take a picture of this car or this house, because they want to sell it in the paper. You know, that hasn't caught on yet, but Montgomery, if you read what he said this week, that's where he's going with it. You know, you would be a commercial link as well as a journalist or a photographer, and that will mean that you've got to be careful about making sure either what you write or what you take pictures of that doesn't upset whoever the commercial interest is. You know, you can just see it now, can't you? How can you run a local campaign opposing a supermarket if Tesco